in the debugger trying to figure out why it's crashing. So this was the entire function I needed to... map exports PDF. That was all I needed to do to take Cairo, to take Roadster and add PDF export. And there's something really cool going on here. The file name that I get came from a GNOME standard file open dialog. But that's not the bug. I think I've got that right. So here's the Cairo code. It's these 1, 2, 3, 4 lines of code. This is what I had to add. I say Cairo create a new Cairo context, and then I say set target PDF. Point that Cairo context at this file and in a PDF way. So I've just selected the back end to choose. And so I've got some A4 paper sizes there, and it will all just work. You found it? Oh my goodness, what is that? You know, that might help. Thank you! We're going to see if we get a PDF file. Let's see what happens. That's too small. Send back in one more time. It compiled. I kept looking at it. I said, it is a valid pointer. Oops, that's not it. I don't know where I'll end up living there. Oshoko, where is Oshoko? Okay, Matt.
West Addison.
Map.pdf. It didn't crash. That's better. I expect the results to not be quite right. Let's see. Due to some the last Cairo-generated PDF I was viewing. Let's see. Oh, that's very sad. That was almost like it didn't exist. Couldn't find trailer dictionary, couldn't find... Oh. F-close might be nice.
Yeah.
So we just close it? The Cairo destroy should actually do all.
See if the call time's different.
Yeah, let's see what happened here. I should have. Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, before.
Can I be to the stadium for the night of the storm?
What's that? It's not that big, no. Yeah, 400K. Since. Okay, those are two good questions. LibArt and GNOME Canvas. So let me start with GNOME Canvas. Cairo has an immediate mode drawing and all these kinds of interesting things. Our experience with these systems suggests to us that the best way to implement the entire system is to have an immediate mode drawing library on the bottom and a retained mode canvas sort of thing on top. So what we need now is someone to come along and write some sort of retained mode library on top of Cairo's Cairo, but it doesn't have any of the backends that we have. It only has an X and maybe an image backend. And it's also got some robustness and numerical problems that are pretty dangerous. Yes?
In UDK, everything becomes Cairo. So you could do grab my screen and just grab the entire PDF.
Oh, what do you want to... Seth and... yeah, good. So... GDK depends on Cairo now, but that doesn't actually change the way everything is drawn. It just means that you can draw a GDK widget with Cairo. Owen Taylor is currently working on making GDK do some more interesting things with Cairo. On the left, we have the color selection widget from GDK, the old style one. Here's the new one that's been drawn with Cairo. So if you look at the zoomed in view, you can see all of the jagged edges all the way up and down there. And on the Cairo version, you've got this nice, smooth anti-aliased curve. And hopefully it doesn't go any slower, at least in a month or two, a little more work. So other than that, I'd love to hear. Other questions? Yes? It doesn't take that much. We try to get to fixed point arithmetic as soon as we can. We do that for reasons of robustness. And that's one of the problems with LibArt. It's all completely floating point based, and so it's very unstable. If you make huge objects and zoom in on them, there's a limit on how much work you can be asked to do. So we hopefully, for drawing just to a memory buffer, it hopefully shouldn't take that much. Another question?
As someone who's tried to aggregate multiple PDF documents, it's been reasonably workable vector format. Would you talk a little bit about encapsulation, for example, rendering multiple documents?
Are drawn with Cairo. Cairo is drawing everything you've seen today. So these slides I can take and I can translate, not very exciting. I can scale, which is a little more exciting. And you, so if you look at this little beetle here in the corner with the little hacker emblem, as I zoom in and in and in, it's a radial gradient that's defined not by pixels, it's defined mathematically. So as we zoom in, we just get more and more PDF in and SVG out. SVG in, get PDF out. At that point, we sort of proven that the imaging model is adequate to get our data back and forth. And at that point, we could probably do some interesting things in terms of reading into PDF documents, spitting them out into a PDF document combined. But then again, Cairo might not be the be-all and end-all of PDF generation libraries. There's a lot of things. In terms of without changing the application?
Yeah, exactly. So
put that support there. But it certainly is very amenable to it in terms of the API that's available. It's going to be very trivial to take that and to redirect Cairo to something else. So it's really easy to do in the application. Like you saw, it was a 10-line change to Roadster. There's no reason not to do that to every application. And at the toolkit level. That, I don't know, it's getting to the point where other people might actually want to use it. I don't know. What you do is you write your slides in XML. So over somewhere here. Nope. All my mail. Cairo. I'm typing blind. Where's my mini buffer? Here's the slides that you saw. I generated this XML file. You should come down and get his USB stick, and otherwise, thank you very much. Fixing my bugs.
Before everyone
goes grip is going to be too painful. Is it? Oh, yeah. So, if it makes a better system, we're always open to take new code. So come join our mailing list and let us know what you got. What is your name? Mailing list of some ideas for things to optimize if someone's looking for a project.
Certainly. I used to share an office with the guy who published recently the fastest capitalization algorithm, which is MLG.
Oh, cool. Yeah, send us some pointers. So,
yeah. For tessellation.
Oh, yeah, MLG, yeah.
Yeah, he's on...
Thank you.
I've got to be careful about belittling other libraries.
It's not a library yet, actually. Haven't you grabbed the pencil?
This one?
Yep. And go for it.
Okay, single mind. Now, whoops. Nope, I didn't do it right.
It's still there, yeah.
Now, how do I finish it?
Press enter.
Enter.
Okay.
Oh, the other one was still there.
Yep.
I'm on one of those.
Select that and open the fill and stroke dialog.
Now that we got kind of big, now how do I edit move the spline points around? This one?
Yep, that's a node tool.
Here we go. Watch it go. Whoa! Hey! What's that?
What are those? I like those.
What in the world? Yeah, this is the fireworks. Yeah, this is what
a correct result?
Yes.
Surprisingly. We spent a lot of time thinking about this.
It's because that's an algorithmic. The
first
one, it cuts everything up into tiny
little
bits.
Okay.
Demo, X11.
So when we put the canvas area to Cairo, well, I say when, if we put the canvas area to Cairo, we're going to get similar results.
Because rhythms. And, let's see if we've got the right caps to show the bug or not. Okay. Wider. Now, what's going on there? That's the correct result I was talking about. That's all correct.
For a stroke.
Yeah, that's not very expected, is it?
No.
What shape would you draw there?
You draw a filled result, so you've still got this line coming.
Yeah, but how would you fill it? What line? Where's the connecting line? Where would you put it?
It should act like a curved edge, but it's not that type of cap, is it?
No, it's the butt.
Yeah,
the
I know.
The cap has to be there. So there's this hole here in your sponge, putting a bunch of circles. When you're actually doing a stroke here with the butt cap, what you're actually doing is striking two points along the outside in parallel. And then when they come along here to the path, I used to show the path in the middle. I'm not showing the path. When you come along here, you're coming along, and these two points are going, and then it turns really fast. And that you're actually getting the outline formed by these two points to that point. That would be this paintbrush spinning and getting into that spot. So that's how you connect those two, is by this weird curve formed by a whole sequence of straight lines like this. Mm. I've done the same fireworks demo I just did with Inkscape on Adobe Illustrator and stuff.
Okay.
It actually tries to draw that curve. But it draws the out perimeter smoothly, just like Cairo does here. But instead of this big hole, you can make an argument for this being a legitimate result. The funny thing, the other thing is people don't very often draw this shape. This is a really fat line, turning really fast. And you can also make it disappear completely with a round cap or a square cap.
I see, but it's not a round cap.
No, with the butt cap, this will show up. And so right now, this is what we do in Cairo. I'd really like to do the evolute, just to say we did it. Way in. Oops, anyway. Wider. So, yeah, switch Inkscape to Cairo, and you get results like this. It'll be a little slower. It has been faster. So some people have compared it to LibArt and found it faster in some cases. So,
I'm not a great fan of LibArt, guys, but...
Which you can't do for Inkscape.
So no.
You get a trade-off. You get perfect software computation and hardware acceleration for the compositing. So you're losing your...
So you can make some beautiful really weird shapes, and you're like, oh, it's still right. And everyone I've studied really hard, I've decided they're actually doing. It's pretty fancy. We're doing fireworks. Have you seen the Inkscape fireworks? Mr. Inkscape came over and asked for a show. Oh, can I undo that?
So, Carl, have you submitted an RFE on this?
I haven't, I should.
Whoa.
What the algorithm is doing on something like this. I mean, it's using a fixed number of segments. And
the funny thing is when we convert that object to a path, we convert that stroke to a path, then...
Well, yes, yeah, the stroke isn't... And that's the thing here. How much accuracy do you need on the stroke? Is there a fixed amount... I haven't used that. You can do something that it's close to that and usually works right, but you get to these cases and it doesn't. There's a really cool hack, and what you can do is do it all linear. You have this path, you approximate it with line segments down to an accuracy that you care about. Yeah. And that's what you're doing. But then you're magnifying that error of either the path, just translate it, or the pin, translate it.
So
at the right spot.
So it redraws out that way rather than having to recompute.
We don't compute anything. It's line segments.
It's line segments. You have one polygon. You have two polygons, and what you're doing is you're computing. They're still called tracings, and you do a convolution of the two tracings. If you go back and you read the paper, that when it's turning quickly here, you can see how many segments they're using to approximate the path. All you have to do here, imagine you had a pen that's the size of the radius of the has the same radius as the brush.
I see.
All you do here, look, it's a curve. That's just a copy of the pen. That's not hard to compute. It's just sitting right there. You just have to know that the trick is to know. When do you copy the path?
Okay, so that's...
So when we made the transition, at that transition, we're going to see this edge of this, using this diamond pen, that diamond edge is going to show up on the join. That's going to be really nasty. Well, instead, if you actually just copy from this point along the edge, so you're translating by that amount, and then up here on the top, you translate up, and you use those 2 segments from the path. Then, to make the connection, that's where you copy from the pen, the pen.
That's okay. I left it sitting here.
I'm so sorry.
All right, guys.
No, that's fine. I know my video works, and I must never see it otherwise.
My demo obviously didn't. That was cool. That was the story. I mean, people fixed that.
You're supposed to be object to?
Yes, that's right.
Grungy low-level
So
Sounds like there. All right. Yeah.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another talk from Jonathan Corbett, talking about hay objects and other rather interesting hybrid kernel channels, and I'll leave you to it.
The 2.6 kernel handles a lot of important tasks like power management and hot plug device management. Increasingly, it's an important piece of the whole system administration puzzle. But it's a very hard thing for people to understand. It's a very complex data structure, a sort of web done by a spider on drugs sort of structure. The documentation is difficult and applies very complicated in where they were going with it. So here's what I'll be talking about. An introduction to the device model in a fairly general sort of sense. And SysFS, which is sort of the user space component of the device model. Introduce those, and we'll go right down to the bottom of the data structures and talk about K-objects and what they do, how they work. Just stop me if you have questions. Throw something or whatever, and I'll try to answer them. So, where does all this come from? Back in 2001, at the very first Kernel Developers Summit, people were trying to talk about ACPI support in particular at that point and how we could support power management. And one of the things, we've really got to do things like suspend the system in the right order. If you have a system that is a very simple structure looking like this and you want to suspend the system, you'd better take care of this disk device, unmount it, and spin it down before you power down the SCSI controller or the PCI bus, or it's just not going to work. So you've got to have that tree so you can walk it. So this device model, device naming increasingly is done this way. If you're running a reasonably modern Linux distribution, likely as not it has UDEV on it, and it builds its /dev directory on the fly. And this is all done by making use of the device model and the hot plug mechanism that goes with it.
Kernel module information is there. There's a great deal of information about the networking on your system. If you just go user space representation of the Linux device model, there's this whole structure built inside the kernel. SysFS reflects that structure quite clearly. Once you get used to navigating through SysFS, you can get a pretty good handle on how things are actually put together inside the kernel. It's this big directory structure, usually mounted under /sys on any kind of modern system. It's big. So I just did a quick vital for most systems. It's got to be there. So its purpose is, I said, the interface to the device model. It's how you look at it. Increasingly, it's intended to be a replacement for the whole /proc mess. /proc is widely seen as being an out-of-control mishmash of weird files and strange formats and so on. SysFS is supposed to be neater with better definition and control. You can do various things through SysFS. You can, using one software suspend implementation, you can suspend your laptop by writing the right value to the right file within SysFS. There's a lot of other things that are in there as well that you can control that way. So I just threw up an example here. You can almost read that. So under sysdevices, there's a directory called PCI 0 whatever, the first PCI bus on the system. And under that is one of the devices connected to it. Now, if you look at all the various attributes that have gone with it, a lot of these are standard attributes that belong to every device. You can get its device number. You can get its power management state. You can get the vendor information that comes with it. And the part under /sys/block, which is where information on block devices live, right? The first disk on the first IDE controller, which is what's here, is in fact a block device, and it's managed by the block subsystem, which has a very different view of it than the device tree does. So if you look there, you'll see various things like the partitions that belong to the block device. You can find out how the device is partitioned for that disk.